And we have another guest who will tell us about ways in which we can reprioritize public assets for the common good. Kumar Rao is senior staff attorney at the Center for Popular Democracy, where he helps manage its racial justice policy work and supports partner organizations in their campaigns around racial equity, criminal justice, and the movement for Black lives. Welcome to KABU, Kumar.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, last month, many Portlanders were disappointed that the city council voted down Commissioner Joanne Hardesty's proposal to shift funds from the police bureau and its gang enforcement team to parks and recreation. But if we in Oregon and Washington states want to reprioritize spending from punitive to supporting systems, we have a lot to learn from what other cities have been doing with their budgets. And Kumar, you're one of the co-authors of the report, Freedom to Thrive, Reimagining Safety and Security in Our Communities. Tell us about some of the key findings about the impacts of increased spending on criminalization, policing, and incarceration over the past three decades.
Sure. Well, yeah, thank you again for having me. And yeah, we were watching closely what was happening in Portland, and though we were, you know, disappointed with the outcome, really wanted to feel encouraged that these fights are happening, that the narrative is beginning to shift. I think we're going to start seeing some real changes happen around our country. But to sort of start from where we began, we put out a report a few years ago, as you mentioned, and really examined what we were doing as a country when it came to spending on our limited resources. We know that we live in countries and in cities where we don't have unlimited access to money and really need to be stewards and moral stewards of our public resources. And what we found in our report was that in city after city, our budgets actually reflected a very kind of perverse sort of sense of what were priorities. As a nation, we're spending upwards of $200 billion a year on policing and jails. And actually, the vast bulk of that money is being spent at the local level. In city after city, we found that anywhere from a third to over half of the general funds in a city were going exclusively to policing and to police departments. And in discussion and deep solidarity and conversation with activists and organizers and residents in these cities, what we heard was that people really felt that it was other types of investments and resources that were getting shortchanged, the types of things that would actually allow communities to be safe and to allow them to thrive, whether that was jobs and housing and healthcare or our youth or even just infrastructure. The kinds of things that would really allow communities to be safe were being shortchanged. And so through this report and through the work of our organization, you know, we're really trying to support a shift in the way we think about public safety and for that to be reflected in budgets and to really start moving, you know, the billions and billions of dollars a year that are just flowing endlessly to police departments, to corrections, to jails, to sheriffs, to the entire kind of mass criminalization, mass incarceration infrastructure, towards the kinds of things that we know our communities desperately need.
And along with those spending increases to policing and criminalization, there are decreases in budgets too, as we saw in Portland, to parks and recreation and other human services. So despite the evidence that all this increased spending on policing does not make cities safer, why do cities and counties continue to rely overwhelmingly on policing and incarceration spending while under-resourcing more effective safety initiatives?
Well, I think it's a combination of a lot of factors, but, you know, ultimately, and then this is the crisis we find ourselves in as a country, but just the vision that the way to advance and enforce public safety is through punitive measures. This isn't how it's done around the world. There's a lot about the United States that we know that, you know, makes us different, whether, you know, it's how we administer healthcare or our priorities at the federal level on the military. It's a vision that we are going to kind of use punitive measures and punishment to affect behavior versus really just investing in communities. There's a legacy here going back probably centuries in terms of the racial dynamics and the sort of white supremacist kind of ideology that is at the core of a lot of this sort of perspective. And ultimately, you know, it's big business, it's big money. The forces that I think are maintaining the status quo or even making it worse as it relates to mass criminalization, over policing, are very powerful political interests. And for a long time, I think they have put the fear of God, in a sense, in elected officials, have really squashed activism and organizing, and I think have fed sort of a false narrative in the media and the public consciousness that anytime you even remotely suggest that we should rethink our spending on policing or on jails, that somehow you are anti-police or you are anti-public safety, when in fact what we're talking about is actually a pro-safety type of initiative. What we're really talking about is trying to make communities safe in the long run and to allow them to be stable and prosperous. And so, you know, that's the kind of thing I think we really need to fracture. I'll just mention briefly that we are at the Center for Popular Democracy, and along with many of the partners that we've been working with, such as Law for Black Lives and BYP 100, and now the National Council of Incarcerated Women and several other organizations, are in the middle of developing a campaign to actually attack this issue at the federal level, and the target being the 1994 crime bill, which kind of put a federal and in some ways liberal imprint and endorsement of punitive measures like policing and prisons as the pathway to public safety. And so I think this issue and this kind of paradigm shift has to happen, you know, at the federal level, at the state level, the municipal county level, and as, of course, at the local level. And so we see these as kind of all deeply tied, and that we need to target all levels.
And there's some pretty exciting campaigns taking place across the country. Could you give us some examples of, well, cities like Durham or other cases where this kind of mobilization has really pushed city councils, city commissions, and metro governments to redirect their budgets towards more socially useful purposes?
Yep. There was a really exciting victory just a couple weeks ago in Durham, North Carolina. As you mentioned, one of our partners in our network within the Center for Popular Democracy called Local Progress, which is a network of progressive elected officials, including Jillian Johnson, who is the mayor pro tempore in Durham, actually led initiative and got a 4-3 vote in the 2020 budget against funding 18 new police officers, and actually took that money, that line item, and raised the wage for part-time city workers to over $15 an hour. So really sort of thinking critically about these requests for increased funding and to look strategically at other priorities in the budget to really invest in communities. There was a similar situation last year in St. Paul, Minnesota, as well as in Minneapolis, where elected officials really looked critically and declined to increase money towards the policing and invested it in parks and recreation or libraries or even more traditional public safety measures that were outside of the police department, such as domestic violence prevention programs through public education. So this is happening. We're still, I think, in a kind of early moment in some sense in terms of this happening, but I do think we're going to increasingly see cities realize that their fundamental interest is towards the public safety of communities and to be moral stewards of public resources. And the two of those really need to be thought to together, and we need to start making some shifts in how we do business for neighborhoods in this country.
And as you noted, the increases in funding for housing, for after-school programs for kids, for parks and recreation, for all kinds of other programs really does create more security. As you note, the more resources that we put into people rather than punitive measures, the more quality of life people have, the flourishing of the community. I mean, there are all kinds of possibilities once people realize they can make that shift. You know, the same kind of fear-mongering that is at the federal level in devoting just an enormous amount of resources into the military complex, the same we have at the local and state levels with these kinds of punitive expenditures that just really squeeze so much out of the resources available to a community.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And, you know, I think Jillian Johnson, as I said, from Durham had a really great quote, which was basically that communities that are safest don't have the most police, they have the most resources. So really what we're talking about is that is to get our community's resources, that's going to lead to public safety. And so we are, I think, very excited at the prospect. As I said, although disappointed in Portland, I feel like that this is going to be back, I'm certain. And if we're really going to be pushing for to make our community safer and stronger, it's going to really require, you know, additional resources into really the basic necessities of what our communities need: housing, healthcare, jobs, youth, education, and infrastructure.
This is Laurie Mercier for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm speaking with Kumar Rao, who is a staff attorney for the Center for Popular Democracy. And Kumar, just in our remaining minute or so, tell listeners how they might become more aware of resources available to help with organizing and committing our own community to this more valuable use of local resources.
Absolutely. So I would absolutely encourage everyone to check out and join the listservs at the Center for Popular Democracy. We are developing a set of campaigns and supporting organizing around the country for groups that are interested in pushing for this agenda, as I said, alongside many partner organizations, as well as we developed a toolkit, which I think some of your listeners may be interested in, through our Local Progress Network. That's at a website called reformtransform.org, and really offering a way to evaluate where cities are on this issue of public safety and their budgets, and to really start to give folks tools to analyze what the priorities are in your city. How much is your city spending on policing? How much it is a percentage of the total budget? How much has that changed over time? You know, how does that compare to spending for affordable housing, jobs programs, mental health, and youth development? And to really sort of offer a way for people to compare and evaluate how their cities are, and to compare that really against other places to see how we are doing across this country. So I would, again, that's reformtransform.org.
Okay. Well, Kumar Rao, thank you so much for joining us today. And we'll post links to that toolkit and the popularDemocracy.org websites. Thanks so much.